Hello, beautiful queens. How are you today? So, this episode, as I'm sure you always know because you click on it, unless it's rolling around from another episode you've just listened to, is called Atypical Anorexia. And this was actually inspired by a previous client of mine. Well, she still is a client of mine because people aren't talking about this in this space. And so, I wanted to create an episode talking specifically to atypical anorexia, what it is, what it means, the symptoms, set point weight, and all of that. But before I get into this, if you are watching on YouTube, hi, you can see me physically waving at you. You're missing out because on the podcast, I know that you may more be a visual learner, which is why you're on YouTube. But on the podcast, I do random, I call them random rambles. And I record extra podcast episodes, not all the time, but I've got about three to four random rambles on there now that I record when I'm out walking and I don't load it up on my website. I don't put it on YouTube. It's just inspiration in the moment. I want to think about something I want to share with you, lovely people. And I record it and I press send or go to whatever the app is that sends it everywhere magically to every podcast platform. And they're on there. So if you do love my content and you specifically like it when I don't have a kind of schedule to stick to with notes that I do have now, if you like my rambles more, you get yourself on the podcast. And for you podcast lovers, please can you send me a screenshot of my 5-star rating that you have given me or will give me, wink, wink, and I will put you in the prize draw to win free access to the Body Love Bite and the support group. Because number one, your support means the world to me. Thank you. But it actually helps me reach more people, get my content out there. As you know, if you're an avid listener, I get so much amazing feedback that my content, my podcast is so valuable and I give so much away. And so I want to get this out to more people that need it, that can't afford coaching or don't even have never heard about me and they need my vibe. So please do that. And I thank you in advance for giving back. So let's get into the episode then. So, first of all, I want to speak to what is atypical anorexia. Atypical anorexia nervosa, it often slips under the radar because the person doesn't look super thin. So imagine someone dealing with all the anorexia symptoms, but they don't fit the quote underweight criteria on the BMI scale. So they might not even appear underweight. They might actually appear quote overweight. This is where it gets fucked up. Interestingly, people with atypical anorexia have usually been overweight. And again, every time I say the word overweight or underweight, by the way, I'm using air quotes, but those in the podcast can't see me. And those in the YouTube, I'm sure, don't want to see me doing this the whole time. But so just going forward, overweight and underweight, I'm doing air quotes. And there's a very annoying fly that has decided to follow me in my room. I'm not happy about that. So if you see me wafting away, that's why. Okay. So as I was saying, interestingly, oh my God, it's literally on my, after I said that, it landed on my actual face. Okay, going back to what I was saying. Those with atypical anorexia usually have been overweight before, but then they've got laser focused on losing weight and starting to go all in, as you I'm sure have experienced, all in on dieting and exercising. And as with anybody of any size, this puts major stress on their bodies, even if they now fall into the healthy weight range. Okay, so just to clarify what I said, those with atypical anorexia tend to be classed as overweight in general, hence them dieting or restricting to try and bring their weight down to a quote normal healthy weight. But actually, it's not healthy for them. So if it's a woman that's experiencing this, she will most likely stop getting her period. Her vital signs can be very low as well. And as I was just saying, the fucked up thing is what's supposed to be a healthy weight range is actually unhealthy and underweight for them. That's really key. Those with atypical anorexia, when they're on the road to recovery, it might mean that they're moving from what's normally seen as a healthy weight range to a weight range that is considered overweight, or someone could go from overweight to obese in atypical anorexia recovery. But here's the thing though, atypical anorexia is just as serious as the usual kind, as the standard anorexia. The rate of hospitalization for both types is equally high, showing they're equally seriously ill. And you know what? The emotional toll and how it messes up their lives, those with atypical anorexia, it's often even worse for these patients with atypical anorexia instead of general anorexia, because we live in a fat phobic society. So it can be a lot worse for someone in a larger body with anorexia. So even though the atypical anorexia nervosa diagnosis is quite new, cases have been popping up for years. And these days, around a third of those seeking treatment for anorexia fit this atypical description. So if you're in a larger body and you're experiencing, I'm going to speak to the symptoms now. If you're experiencing all of these symptoms, yet you're not, quote, underweight, then you need to seriously get help, because do not suffer, do not struggle. You are, quote, sick enough. You don't need to be a certain body size or weight to be diagnosed with an eating disorder. It's all about how severely it affects your mental, emotional, and physical health, not your body size, okay? So the signs of atypical anorexia are, of course, the same and similar to those of regular anorexia. So the physical signs are, before I speak to that, people dealing with atypical anorexia, they might not look super skinny, but they're still severely restricting their eating. And these are the physical signs. Noticeable weight loss, even if it still means they're in a normal range. Skin that's yellow or that's drying out. Stomach and digestive problems. Pain in the tummy area. Getting sick and run down more easily. Although that is a funny one, because a lot of clients I speak to actually don't get sick at all in anorexia. And then when they're in recovery, they're sick all the time. That's just really interesting and all part of the process. But generally getting sick more easily because they've got such a weak immune system. Trouble going to the bathroom because they're not eating anything, right? Feeling low and tired and low on energy and vibrancy. Low blood pressure and low heart rate. Dizziness and fainting, headaches and migraines, feeling the cold easily. Especially those atypical anorexia patients who are also purging behaviors such as laxatives, making themselves sick, etc. That can just worsen absolutely everything. The behavioral and emotional side of atypical anorexia then. The main difference, as I was saying, as the whole point of this episode, the main difference between atypical anorexia and regular anorexia is the weight factor, but the emotional and behavioral symptoms are pretty similar. But one big thing to note though, is that people with atypical anorexia might think they're not, quote, sick enough, or they might use their weight to believe that they're healthy or they're fine. If they're not super underweight, their issues might go unnoticed. This is the problem. So look out for these behaviors and feelings. Focusing a lot on weight, size, and how they look. Feeling bad about themselves or seeing their body in a distorted way. Being super scared of gaining weight or having fat. And if they do have that, hiding it at every cost and having so much shame around that. Thinking a ton about food, what's in it and how it affects their body, avoiding eating or trying to hide eating from others, like not wanting to eat in front of others at all, getting really emotional and moody, OCD behaviors, controlling behaviors, ADHD type behaviors, having trouble concentrating and thinking clearly, experiencing severe anxiety around food. And I want to share, actually, I want to read out a screenshot of what my client wrote to me. Now she's So without saying too much, she's a client of mine. She has been for a while now, and now she's sought in person, in clinical treatment, if that is even a word, inpatient treatment. She's sought that out now, and she sent me a message, and I just want to read it to you. This is what inspired me to create this episode. She says, "I think what made it the easiest was this professional telling me that I am sick enough to get their help. Because one of her questions was, what held me back before for getting in-person help? And I said, I don't think I'm small enough. I don't think I'm thin enough. I don't think I'm sick enough for people to believe me. As when I've been in a doctor environment before, I've been made to feel like I'm wrong. I'm not sick enough. I'm obese for my height and weight. And I felt like I would always be turned away because that's what's always happened to me. Everyone's turned her away before because she was in the obese category and she literally has all the signs, symptoms, behaviors for anorexia. And then she goes to say, but I did say that the work I did with you opened my eyes to see it's not true everywhere, but I need to feel safe and not judged because that's all I have had when I've tried to start the process of recovery everywhere else. Can you see the problem? Like, it makes me so angry that this client has sought to get help in the past and people at a doctor have just not believed her. They've basically been saying things like, well, I don't believe that you don't eat because look at your body size. You must be lying because you can't be this big when you don't eat anything or when you're making yourself sick or when you're addicted to laxatives. And it's so dangerous. And this refers back to what I shared earlier, that those who have atypical anorexia, who are in bigger bodies and experiencing the full-blown everything of anorexia, it's even more disturbing and challenging and disrupting to them because of said message, right? And I want to discuss the long-term effects of atypical anorexia, which is obviously the same as anorexia. Some people might think that atypical anorexia isn't as serious as standard anorexia, but of course, that is absolutely not true. It leads to the same health and mental issues as regular anorexia, such as harming important organs, losing or damaging bones and muscles, not being able to do normal daily things, heart problems, feeling more and more depressed, and even considering suicide, death. And I'm not joking when I say death. I mean, obviously, it's not a joking matter, but when I had anorexia and I got given this leaflet, and then like the worst case scenario was death, I was like, oh, that will never happen to me. It would have happened to me. Like, it's that serious. Not to mention like the extreme mental and emotional effect it has on your life. You haven't got a life. You're literally just surviving. You are not thriving and you are consumed by fear. And you know this if you're experiencing this. I just want to know that I feel you. Studies have shown that those with atypical anorexia were actually considered obese before their disorder started. This means they may not reach out for help before getting underweight. So now I want to talk a bit about set point weight. Now I've done, I think, two full episodes specifically talking about set point weight, but I just want to speak to it here because it makes sense, right? Some people can't understand how someone can be anorexic and be fat or be at a normal weight and be anorexic, right? And I get it because there was a time when I wouldn't have understood that either. But anorexia is stereotyped as someone who looks like they're walking around like a walking skeleton, right? And whilst this may be the case for most people, it's not the case for all people. We all have different body types, different body compositions, and some people naturally have larger bodies. That is just the way it is. You cannot control your body size unless you want to live with a restrictive eating disorder, or at the very least, with disordered eating for the rest of your life. I'm going to say that again because this is the biggest truth bomb ever. You cannot control your body size unless you are wanting to live with a restricted eating disorder, or at the very least, disordered eating for the rest of your life. And I want to share with you four factors that have actually created your unique natural set point weight. And I'm sharing them with you because I want to help you see that although it may absolutely suck if you are in a larger body because of the world we live in, not because your body's large, there's nothing wrong with that. It sucks because of society, like, hello, that's obvious. But there's nothing you can do about it apart from accepting and embracing your natural, authentic body, which, by the way, is 1000% possible and extremely freeing and liberating. And I've worked with many clients who are in larger bodies, and I know I speak from a position of a normal size body, whatever that means, but it's absolutely possible. There's so many incredible women out there who are doing it, and I can support you to do the same. All right, number one factor that creates your unique natural set point weight is genetics and prenatal factors. A mother's diet and lifestyle choices matter a great deal and may influence a baby's body composition. The genes you inherit from parents determine your set point weight. There are over 400 genes that have been identified as playing a role in body composition. These genes are pretty common and are found in around 85% of the population. These genes play a role in weight gain or weight loss by affecting appetite, metabolism, cravings, and fat distribution. And often, the genes that result in weight gain and naturally a bigger body are called thrifty genes. This is because they can be traced back to our ancestors. It was important in times past that people survived off of stored body fat for periods of time. This is why these specific genes are so common. So it's actually pretty smart that your body does that. Our body is not adapted to the way we live, like the what are we in the 20th century? Whatever, if we're saying that, I assume we are. Don't even know what that means, if I'm being honest. Our bodies haven't adapted to the modern life that we live, and there's nothing we can do about that. We can be pissed off about it. We can be like, well, that's stupid. It's not fair. Why does my body not know that? It's got fat on that I don't want it on there. Well, your body doesn't care about that. Your body cares about your survival and keeping you as healthy and as protected from death as possible. So number one, just to recap, that the number one reason that gives you your unique set point weight is genetics and prenatal factors. The second factor is how you were birthed into the world. This may sound crazy, but it's true. Can anyone remember that old TV show in England? And it was called Strange But True. Ah, fly, go away. That just came into my head. Anyway, if you remember, let me know. I'm 36, so anyone around that age in the UK. So number two, how you were birthed into the world. Though the reason is unknown, children are born via C-section seem more prone to obesity later in life. This is also true for formula-fed infants who tend to be heavier than breastfed babies. And this may be because those two groups develop different gut bacteria, which can affect fat storage. It's important to note that these factors are generally not made by the choice of either the mother or the baby. So I learned this in my training, actually, my nutritional training. If a baby is born natural, like through the vagina, they get all the good bacteria like on the baby, and then it goes into their immune system and helps create their gut microbiome and all of that. And so if your baby is born by C-section, again, you may not have a choice in that, it's not going through the vaginal canal. And so what they recommended actually is if those parents that are future parents that are aware of this, if they have to have a C-section, they can get all the, sounds so funny, all the bacteria and all the juices from their vaginal canal and like wipe it all over the baby. Like, I'm not joking, because it's as close to a natural birth as possible, and that will help your baby's immune system and all of the things. So that's a real deal. Like, it's insane really how it works. But also with being breastfed, like, well, my mum tried to breastfeed me and had no milk, so I was formula fed. So if I was breastfed, would I have a naturally smaller set point weight? Probably. Who knows? There's nothing I can do about it though, right? Okay, number three, medications or medical conditions. Many medical conditions can only be treated with pharmaceutical drugs. Weight gain is a common side effect of many medicines, including diabetes medications, antidepressants, antipsychotics, etc. These drugs may increase your appetite, reduce your metabolism's effectiveness, or even alter your body's ability to burn fat, increasing your rate of fat storage. Additionally, many common medical conditions can predispose you to weight gain. A key example is hyperthyroidism. Now, again, if you need support through a medical condition and the side effect is weight gain and you need that medication for the rest of your life, then your set point weight is going to be higher because the medicine is increasing your body weight and there's nothing you can do about that. It's like a choice between supporting yourself with the medical care you need and perhaps being a bit smaller or being in a smaller body, or taking care of yourself and giving yourself what you need to support your health and being in a bigger body. That's literally what it comes down to, right? And I know that years ago, oh my God, I can't believe I'll say this, but I share everything with you all anyway. And I'm sure many of you can relate. Years ago, if someone would have came to me and said, Victoria, I can make you thin, whatever that even meant to me at the time, because it changed, right? When I found the gym world and all of that, I can make you thin for the rest of your life, no matter what you eat or don't eat, but it's going to cost you 10 years of your life. I would have traded without a shadow of a doubt. I would have traded 10 years. I don't know why I'm waving a pen at you right now. I just feel like I need to hold something. Now I've dropped said pen. I'm going to hold my crystal. One of my clients bought me this. It's a rose quartz, which is a self-love crystal, and it's carved in my spirit animal, which is a bird of prey. Oh, I've lost my train of thought now. That's well annoying. Literally can't think what I was going to say. Am I going to pause this? Am I not going to pause it? I'm not going to pause it. It might come back to me, but there you go. I'm going to pause it. I'll be back one sec. I know what I was saying and I didn't go back and check. I just remembered. I did pause it though and then read what I just written? That's not even English. I was talking about I would have traded 10 years of my life, unfortunately, without even thinking about it, to be in a thin body for the rest of my life. I mean, what the actual fuck? But now there is no fucking way I would trade any years of my life for a thin body for the rest of my life. None whatsoever. Anyway, number four, your previous and current environment. So what I mean by this is, and this is how it determines your set point weight, the most two common reasons for the weight you are and that you will be forever, unless you drastically change your life and go live on a desert island or something. Number one is genetics, and number two is environment. And so I don't know why I put this on number four, but there we go, I have. Number four is your previous and current environment. So in some areas, buying fresh foods high in nourishment is simply not an option. These areas are often called food deserts and are located in urban neighborhoods or rural towns without readily accessible, healthy, affordable foods. This is largely due to a lack of grocery stores, farmers markets, and fresh food providers within walking distances, because those that are living in such regions are often poor and may not have access to a vehicle to travel to buy groceries. An inability to buy healthy and fresh food limits your diet and limits your choices of what you even want to eat. Social class as well, right? This is so tied into all of it. Other environmental factors may play a role, as well as including, okay, save my recordings at, okay, save. Apologies for that. Something popped up in front of my face. Other environmental factors may include artificial light, believe it or not, from electric bulbs, computers, phones, televisions, etc., even though the link between screen use and weight gain has been well established, most studies chalk this up to lack of exercise. I mean, you don't have to exercise, like that's another conversation altogether. However, nighttime exposure to light does increase chances of your circadian rhythm completely changing, which can also contribute to weight gain, like a natural higher set point weight, if that's your lifestyle, if you do nights at work, for example, and when you're supposed to be sleeping as a human at night, and you're up at night doing night shifts in like hospitals or wherever with bright lights, that can affect your circadian rhythm and your hormones and all of it. So it is what it is. If you love your job, then it is what it is. Acceptance, surrender, it is what it is. So when it comes to your natural set point weight in general, multiple factors, as you can see, are at play, many of which are completely beyond your control and include genetics, childhood habits, medical conditions, hormones, gut bacteria, all of it. And so it is not in your control. So you can listen to all of this and then be mad at your mom for not having a vagina birth. Or you could be mad at her for not breastfeeding because you might be thinner then. Or you could be mad at your job. Or you could be, what else have I said? You can be mad at your medication that you have to take. You can be mad at all kinds of things, your genetics. Why have I got to have my mom's legs and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? It is what it is. And that's like one of the key parts of recovery, to just fully learn. And this is what I show my clients how to do, right? Is to learn how to just radically accept yourself as you are. And then that builds on unconditional love. And then you get to embrace who you are. And at the same time, you get to live in freedom and liberation and actually live a life, not just survive. You actually get to thrive. So if you are suffering, and what I've said resonates with you, and you're thinking that you're not sick enough, so you're suffering in silence because you don't think you're thin enough or whatever it is, please reach out. Please see this as a sign and reach out for help, because an eating disorder is serious and has a dramatic and dangerous effect on your mental and physical health, regardless of your body size. There is more to life than thinness, I promise you. Let me show you, work with me, reach out to me, get help from a professional. You do not need to be suffering. And it is shit that the world we live in is so fat phobic. I get it. But there's so many healthy, happy, quote, fat people out there. So if you're struggling and you have atypical anorexia, reach out for help. I've got you, okay? All right, sending you so much love. Big hugs. I'm here if you need me. And don't forget to rate and review my podcast. Much love. Mwah. Bye.